And away we go, back for hour number two today, Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. It's still amazing to me that we are saying 2020, but this hour is going to be an amazing hour because we are joined by a dear friend of this program who I have had on several times, but every time he's on, we learn something and we get something out of it, and that is what good radio is supposed to do. You probably remember him best as being the chief medical expert on the Today Show and Good Morning Miami and writing several best-selling books. He has not been with us in quite a long time. I'm so glad he's back this morning because the topics this morning are weight loss for the New Year's resolutions that people have made, exercise, and depression that sets in this time of year. All pertinent subjects that hopefully we will be able to cover in the next 45 minutes right here on the Now program. What a great pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones, as it always is, and I really cannot thank him enough because he lives on a different coast than we do, and since we're here in the morning slot now, he had to get up at 6 a.m. So it's great, but he's used to that with the Today Show and Good Morning America. What a pleasure it is to welcome to the microphones our dear friend, Dr. Art Uhlein. Dr. Uhlein, how are you?
Thank you, Scott. Never better, and the pleasure is mine.
Doctor, you had a great trip over the holidays. Tell us about it.
Well, my wife and I went back to Australia, one of our favorite places to greet the new year. We've been there four, and we're debating about that, either four or five times, and each time has been spectacular. We were joined by about a million of our closest friends at the harbor to watch probably the world's finest fireworks display and to hug and kiss on the midnight and say this is going to be a great year.
Australia, of course, in the news a lot now, the terrible fires that are going on over there. Is there a feeling of that in Australia?
It is a catastrophe in Australia. And of course, it was not a catastrophe for us. We were in the larger cities, and we were over in Tasmania, and the wind was blowing in a favorable direction for us. The tragedy is that it is destroying the bush and killing literally tens of millions of animals. It's a tragedy in another way because... And by the way, we saw almost nothing of it. One day in Melbourne, the sky was cloudy, and the halls in our hotel smelled slightly. Otherwise, we were not even inconvenienced. The tragedy is that 20 years ago in Australia, the scientists and the weather forecasters predicted that this would happen, and they actually predicted that it would start in the year 2020. The people who are claiming climate hoax, this is all nonsense, are in for a rude awakening. Here in this country, the scientists are now predicting that by the year 2050, no ski resort in the lower 48 will be able to open because there will be no natural snow, and it will be too warm to make artificial snow. That's less of a catastrophe, but it's a sign of things to come if we don't do something.
You know, Dr. Uhlein, not to get in too deep here, but we had a climate expert on I think it was last year, and it was not political at all. It was not a political person. It was just a scientist, and the thought had always been, in my mind, that this is something that could happen, but it's never going to happen in my lifetime, because it's just not going to happen that fast, and not something we have to worry about. Now, after talking to this climate expert, it's my understanding that if we don't do something within the next 5 years, or maybe sooner, that this is going to happen in my lifetime. And a matter of fact, this is going to happen within the next 10, 15, 20 years.
It is possible. And I agree with you, by the way. This is not a political issue. This is a scientific issue. And for me, it's an issue for my children and grandchildren. I'm 83 now, Scott. So there's a pretty good chance that if it happens within the next 15 to 20 years, I won't be around to watch it. That's not why I'm concerned. I care about our planet and our grandchildren, my grandchildren. The problem with climate issues is that once it gets going, the speed with which things happen begins to increase. It accelerates. It begins to feed upon itself. And by the way, I don't have a problem with those who say it is this is not man-made. A large part of it is just happening. It's the nature of things. The concern that I have is that it's impossible to deny that a portion of this is man's contribution to it. I've heard a number of scientific experts, weather experts and climate experts, speak on this, and they don't blame man for everything. But what they say is, if we don't put the brakes to our contribution to the problem, we will never be able to forgive ourselves, and we may not be able to turn the process around. And I think that's rational thinking. I don't think it's a political issue at all. It's a human issue. It's an ethical issue. It's a moral issue.
It, very well put. And it's interesting that it has become a political issue. But moving on beyond that, here we are, first of the year. Every year, I think since the beginning of time, the number one New Year's resolution has always been to lose weight, and it starts out good. It always seems to start out good, but somewhere along the line, we fall off the wagon and sometimes fall off in a worse place than where we started. Why is this, Dr. Ewing?
Well, I have some personal thoughts about that. I think there are two or three reasons. And reason number one is because we try to do it too fast. We say, I'm going to lose 10 pounds. I'm going to lose 20 pounds. I'm going to lose all this extra weight I've gone on. So we, in order to do that, we start doing things that are unsustainable. We starve ourselves. We punish ourselves. We put ourselves through intolerable and unsustainable regimens. And I tell people, hey, why don't you just make a resolution to lose 1 ounce a day? Just 1 ounce. 1/16th of a pound, which means you only have to cut back a couple 300 calories a day. You can almost sustain your current eating plan. In fact, if you're willing to walk 3 miles a day, you don't have to change anything you're doing. You can keep eating the same things that you shouldn't be eating if you just add 3 miles a day. And guess what? At the end of the year, you'll have lost 20 pounds. You got 40 pounds to lose? Do it again next year. Because walking 3 miles a day is actually a joy. It takes me an hour. Giving up a glass of wine, a piece of bread, and a small chunk of that meat you're eating is all you have to do. And that really is sustainable. One way to do that, by the way, is to eat more slowly. If you eat more slowly, if you say, I am going to take 20 to 30 minutes to consume the food that I normally eat in 8 minutes. You won't be hungry at the end of 12 or 14 or 16 minutes. You look at this and say, I don't need to eat this. So the number one thing I tell people is to slow down and just make small, sustainable cuts. The number two thing I tell people is eat better. Don't cut anything out. Just make better choices. Look at the things sitting on your plate and ask yourself, is this the best thing I could really do for my health? And if it's not, tell yourself, I'll try something different tomorrow. You don't like a salad, you got a big piece of meat or fish sitting on the plate, and you don't like your salad, my suggestion for tomorrow is take a small piece of that salmon or meat, 1/6 of what you normally eat, cut it into small chunks and put it in the salad and use meat and fish as a condiment. It'll turn a salad that you don't like into a really enjoyable meat. And by the way, it'll cut out that 300 calories you need to give up today. And the last thing, and this may really be the most important thing, is start walking. Start doing exercise. Take 30 to 60 minutes out of your day, not to punish yourself with work, but to learn the potential, to discover the potential in your body. You and I have talked about this. You know I exercise 4 or 5 times a week, and I do it pretty seriously. And that's what makes it possible for me to climb mountains, to go skiing. 2 weeks ago, I was skiing. I'm going skiing in another 10 days with my grandchildren. So it opens the door to totally new expectations for your life. You know what? Our society has expectations for older people. We're expected to slow down. We're expected to grow weak. We're expected to lose our physical capability. And that is all nonsense. It is because we stop moving that we lose the ability to move and to be strong. So those are my three chief pieces of advice. Go slow. Make it pleasurable. Do exercise and think about quality when you're eating.
You know, Dr. Yulian, I've had a theory on this for years, just when it comes to weight loss in general, is when people eat at home, and certainly that is healthier in a lot of ways, but a lot of people, when they eat at home, tend not to eat the healthy things. So they get a large quantity of something, and they just continue to eat and snack on it all day long. And I've always thought that a first step to kind of curtailing that is that make plans, go out to a restaurant with somebody, and try to have a smaller portion, try to eat something healthy in the restaurant, but even if you don't, at least you're out, you're up, you're moving, and you are not going to have seconds, thirds, and fourths, because you're only going to have what they bring you on the plate.
Exactly. They're going to charge you for the seconds and thirds and fourths. Well, my wife and I have an interesting twist on that. If you don't bring unhealthy foods into your house, you can't eat them. They're not there. And I got to be honest with you. You know, I ask my wife every day for dinner, what kind of ice cream are we having for dessert? And she laughs again and says, I didn't buy ice cream. All right? Hey, honey, what kind of crackers do we got? Well, there are no crackers in the house. She won't buy them. But when we go out to the restaurant, and we do it once a week, at least once every 2 weeks, we go to a place called Hi-Ho, Hi-Ho Burgers. And they've got the best hamburgers in Los Angeles. I love it there. So I don't feel guilty about it because she won't bring the unhealthy food into our house. So I can have 13 healthy days at home. And one of those days where we call it, what the heck? It's only one day every 2 weeks. Let's go to Hi-Ho.
Yeah, and I think those are the things that a lot of times you don't hear on these weight loss shows or in these weight loss books, just little things you can do to help with this.
Yeah, it shouldn't be an all-or-nothing kind of thing, because none of us can sustain the all-or-nothing. Don't eat any fat ever. Nonsense. Take all the pleasure out of eating. That's nonsense. What you need to do is build a plan that allows for a little joy, all right? I get joy at Hi-Ho, and I'm willing to eat healthy and not find crackers and ice cream if my wife will let me go to Hi-Ho once every 2 weeks. And you know, at 83, one of the things that happens as you grow older, and this is pretty much unavoidable, exercise is kind of a barrier against this, it helps. Your metabolism slows down. It's just natural. So that if you keep eating at the age of 50 the same way you ate at the age of 20 or 30, you're going to gain weight. And if you keep eating at the age of 70 the same way you ate at the age of 50, you're going to gain weight. And there are only two choices. And one is to eat healthier, cut back that small amount. And the other is to make up for it, this decline in metabolism. You burn fewer calories, it's just natural, by adding exercise. Not painful exercise, a walk, two walks a day. For me, walking is not about exercise. It's about meeting my neighbors. We live in a lovely little residential area. It's about seeing things I've never seen before. I went 12 years in this house we live in now without noticing that one of the neighbors had a 100-foot-tall palm tree, and it is the only palm tree in a historic neighborhood that has only Chinese elms.
Hmm.
I hadn't noticed it for 12 years. So I go out now, and I look at things. I soak up life. I say hello to my neighbors. You know what? They say hello back. It adds joy to the day.
And I think, especially in the cell phone age that we live in now, people don't really pay attention to the world around them at all.
Don't get me started, Scott. This is really a sore spot with me. And I think we're facing a national tragedy 10, 20, 30 years down the road. If you look at young people here in Los Angeles, they're just looking down at their cell phones. In the gym, they're sitting on the equipment looking at their cell phones. Walking across the street, they're walking so slowly they can't make it across the street in one signal because they're looking at their cell phones. They're going to have sore necks. They're going to be overweight. They're going to be dullards because they're looking at their cell phones.
It's interesting. I am shocked that how... I'm just shocked what would happen if you took somebody's cell phone just for 24 hours. I don't know if they could function.
My grandchildren would have trouble. It is interesting because I've started leaving my cell phone home. I got to be honest with you. I'm just like everyone else. I'm attracted to my cell phone. It's kind of a, well, I wonder what's going on. And the easiest way to resist this is to leave it at home. People say, I tried to reach you. Well, I'm sorry. I was out. I left my cell phone home. Gosh, how do you do that? It's real easy. You plug it in and walk out the door and leave it behind. I think it's an important thing, and I think you've hit on a more important subject than most people realize.
Without question. Now, you mentioned the gym, Doctor. Now, something that goes hand in hand with weight loss is exercise. And a lot of people make New Year's resolutions that they are going to go to the gym. I think more gym memberships are bought this time of year. than maybe any other time of year. I think partially because of the weight loss, partially because people, especially in the Midwest, want to get in better shape before summer comes about. But yet, that seems to fall by the wayside as well. And, you know, this is tied into cell phones as well. I see more pics on the internet of people from gyms than just about anywhere else. And I'm never sure, is that to show me that you're there, or is that to affirmate in your own mind that you're there?
You're asking a really good question, and I don't know the answer to that. I go to the gym for a different reason. I don't like the gym. I mean, let me be upfront about that. I do not like lifting 100-pound weights. I do not like pulling down on 100-pound weights. But I go there because it gives me the capability to live a different life than any other 83-year-old I know. And I don't know a lot of 83-year-olds because most of my friends have died. But going to the gym gives me the capability to go skiing in 10 days and keep up with my grandchildren. It gives me the capability to stumble and not fall down. It gives me the capability to climb to 9,400 feet, it's a hike, not a climb, every time we're in Utah, we have a home in the mountains. And it gives me the capability to say, shall I climb Kilimanjaro this summer or wait till the next? These are realistic things for me. These are not dreams. And by the way, you're not going to get a picture of me skiing because I don't take my cell phone with me.
That is a funny world kind of thing that has come up in the last few years, is pictures from the gym. That always fascinates me, and you see a lot of them this time of year because people have those memberships. I hope they're there for the right reasons, but why do people fall off the wagon so easily when it comes to the gym, even after they've paid for that high-dollar membership sometimes?
Well, I think there are two reasons. I look around my gym, and I think there are two reasons. And it's interesting because I'm going to look more carefully when I go in today and try to guess which ones will be there next month and which ones will be gone. At our gym, it's not air-conditioned, it's not fancy, it was founded in 1938, and it's more of a social community, and people tend to stay there for a long time. But I think there are probably a couple reasons. One reason is that people go for the wrong reason. It's kind of like, wait, I'm going to lose 30 pounds in 4 weeks. And I'm going to get fit in 4 weeks. It doesn't happen that way. It requires constant, long-term commitment. And the second reason, I think, is that they try to do too much too quickly, and they actually hurt themselves. They injure themselves. They get very sore. I've learned that I have to cut back at the age of 83. Those tendons and ligaments aren't as strong as they used to be. So I now force myself to stay moderate so I don't hurt myself. I go more often, and I do less each time. So those are the two reasons, unrealistic expectations and trying to do it all at one time. I urge people, those who are listening, you know, if you made more than one New Year's resolution, get rid of everything but one. Concentrate on one and do that one carefully, thoughtfully, and persistently. After you reach that goal, start the second one. Life was not meant to be done in a day. You didn't get where you are in a day, and don't try to fix everything in a day. It's not the way things work.
I think that's good advice all the way around for just about anything in life.
I agree with you.
When it comes to the gym, though, one final thing on this is I think that, unfortunately, some people do go for health. And I think the people who go for health have a better chance of sustaining the gym. But I think the conflict is that there are people there just to look a certain way. Now, if that's a real life goal of yours, that's great, and you know, onward and upward. But it seems like a lot of people who do not go to the gym at all are going there, and the sole purpose is to fix how they look, so maybe they will be more appealing to other people, maybe their clothes will feel better on them, maybe they'll get in sizes that they want to wear, and I don't know if that is sustainable over a long period of time as a reason to go.
Well, it depends how you define a long period of time. Again, I'm looking at it through the lenses of an 83-year-old, all right? And if you want to look at 83 the same way you did at 30, you're in big trouble from the get-go. I every once in a while, I talk to a group, and I give them a picture of me for their, you know, when they do the promotions out front. And I give them a picture that's 35, 40 years old. And then I get up in front of them, and I'm usually talking about how to feel young, all right? And if you want to feel young, the best thing to do is to use a 30-year-old picture of yourself. That's the one you look at. I've got one over my desk. I'm looking up here at the wall, and I've got three pictures of me that were taken 35 years ago. That's the way I want to feel, all right? But I don't go to the gym to look like that. I go to the gym because when I walk out, I feel strong. I feel vital. I feel capable. All right? I told you I don't like what I'm doing in the gym. I don't like the way it feels in that when I'm in the gym. But it feels so good when I leave. That's why I go.
And I think it will continue to go on, and hopefully people will take these tips and maybe succeed a little better than they have in the past. The next subject, and where I want to spend the last 20 minutes today, the time always goes so fast, is probably the most important subject, because depression, anxiety, bipolar disorders, all those things that go into mental illness, that's really the flag we ought to be under here. Mental illness happen this time of year quite a bit. It starts with Christmas. It starts with the holidays. People get depressed. Suicide rates go up. Then we get into the months of January, February, and March. And here in the Midwest, it's dark. It's cold. And this causes very unhappy times for people who have clinical depression and who don't have clinical depression. How do we get through this?
Well, the first thing I think we should do is start by separating mild mood disorders, sadness, mild feelings of depression from the more serious forms of mental disorder. Bipolar disorder is a much more serious thing than seasonal affective disorder, a long word for something that means when you don't get enough light, your mood tends to go down. And this is very common in some, particularly you go to Seattle and where it rains all winter and the sun never comes out. These people are deprived of the bright lights, the spectrum of light that literally affects your mood. Now, for that kind of thing, there's a very simple treatment. You can either move to Southern California or you can buy a light box that actually mimics the spectra of light, sunlight, that change your mood. And so some people will sit in front of a light box an hour a day. They just put it at their desk, and it will change their mood. Some people are helped by therapy that is not focused on the fact that you're mentally ill. It's focused on your perspective, perhaps. There's a big difference. I can think of something that comes to mind. When I was feeling down one day, I was at a meeting, and where different people, everybody at the meeting, is assigned the role of moderator for some panels, and then they are panelists on other panels. And the role of moderator is kind of a tough role. and if you care about doing a good job. And one day, I was assigned five panels to moderate. It was like, how am I going to do this? And I was feeling down, okay? I wasn't feeling depressed, but I was feeling down. And I went to a friend, Scott Eblen, and who's a nationally known expert on leadership, and I said, Scott, this, you know, he said, how are you feeling? I said, I'm not feeling good right now. I have to moderate five panels. He said, Art, you're looking at this the wrong way. Yeah, tell me how I should be looking at this. He said, you get to moderate five panels. You don't have to moderate five panels. They like the way you moderate panels, and you get to moderate five panels. And basically what Scott was saying is, if you don't like the picture, change the frame. It's one of the most important things that I've been given in the last year. He gave me the gift of knowing that there is a way to look at things differently. Change the frame if you don't like the picture. Know that you are empowered to leave the picture if you don't like it. Not to walk out on life, but to change the way you see things, to change what you have to do. There's nobody forcing us to do all the things we do. So I think my first piece of advice would be, if you don't like the picture, change the frame. And if the picture is so terrible, so bad, that you're falling into the realm of serious depression, get help. Get professional help. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be ashamed. Get help.
You know, Doctor, why is it that, and this truly is, I've heard this story over and over again from many different people. And I think, and I've said it before, I think it's because depression and mental disorders, mood disorders, are not terminal cancer, they're not diabetes, they're not strokes. Why is it that people on these medications who do go get help stop taking them? I've heard that story so many times with so many different people.
Well, there are several reasons for it. One valid reason are side effects. Medications have side effects, and sometimes they're intolerable. And instead of just going back and saying, I'm having real problems with this medication, it's giving me headaches, it's making it's knocked my balance off, they just stop. Another reason may be that the medications don't work as expected. Perhaps they're not doing enough. And instead of going back to the doctor and saying, could we try something else, they just drop. They give up. Another reason, I think, has to do with the fact that we stigmatize mental problems. Where people don't want to admit to themselves or to others that they are need a medication to help them get through something. So there are a whole host of reasons. I think that if someone is on a medication and it doesn't seem to be working or it's causing side effects, the important thing is to go back and talk to the physician who put you on the medication about these issues. It's interesting, Scott. In the last year, I've started having some really strange episodes that we have not been able to diagnose yet. The current thought of my physicians is that I'm having something called partial seizures, partial temporal lobe seizures. So I have this little spell that lasts 5 or 10 minutes, and I recover completely from it. The concern is that I keep having these. They will occur with greater frequency. They develop what's known as a seizure tract. So they put me on medications that are so much worse than the seizures. I mean, I just couldn't stand them. The two medications they put me on have 24 known side effects, and I was having 14 of them. And I called the doctor and said, I got to quit these. And she said, no, you don't got to quit anything. You've got to come back in and we'll try something different. And it's working now. She said, you got to be patient. I warned you there would be side effects and that it would take 60 to 90 days for them to wear off. She was right. Almost all of them have worn off. So I urge people, if number one, if you need to be put on a medication, don't walk out of the office until you understand why you're taking it, until you understand the potential benefits, until you know about the side effects. Go home and read about the medications. And if you're having problems with them, don't quit them without talking to your physician.
And that's the interesting thing. I have a friend who is diabetic as well as dealing with depression. And if the diabetes medication is off, which it has been at times, this person would not stop the diabetes medication. They would call the doctor, they would make an appointment, they would get in there within that week, and they would switch up the medication until they felt better. But for some reason, when it comes to mental illness, that's not the way it's handled. That same person just stopped the medication until it got so bad. It took a couple months because that medicine stays in your system for a while. But after a couple months, when things were miserable again, eventually they had to go back to the doctor. And of course, the doctor was a little ticked off because the person stopped the medication without telling them. And now they were coming back. But everything got better and they got on a medication that worked. But it's just not treated like other illnesses.
I charge this up to human nature. We're all human. And we all screw up. We all do things wrong once in a while. And we just need to accept this as part of our humanity. I don't have a problem with it. I have a problem with doctors who get angry at their patients because they do that. A doctor should know by the time they get out of medical school that this is what human beings do. And it just calls for understanding. Part of the problem is that we don't have enough time with our doctors now. Doctors are pushed, pressed. They spend 5 minutes with the patient. And it's really hard to communicate in depth with the patient, to communicate in a humane way with a patient when all you got is 5 minutes. And they're making you put into a computer. Now, you can't even look at the patient with these electronic records. You're busy typing something into a computer. By the way, some medical systems, larger systems, have solved that by hiring medical scribes. These are people who do all the typing into the computer, and the doctor tells them what to type in. I think it's a huge improvement.
I don't mean to make a sweeping statement here because, as you said, there are seasonal disorders when it comes to mental illness. There are there's depression, there's anxiety, there's bipolar disorder, there are other ones. But this, just the sweeping statement I want to make for the time we have left is, in all those cases, because people do function with all those illnesses, isn't one of the worst things to do to act like everything's okay and not tell anybody, not talk to anybody, even if you feel bad? What can telling and just getting it off your chest with somebody do for you?
I'm glad you brought that up. It's you notice, Scott, I just went public with the fact that I'm having what we think are seizures. Some people would hide that. They'd have to cover that up. And it feels so good to not be embarrassed or ashamed about what I'm going through. Yeah, I got seizures. Some people would call that a mental health program because it is in my brain, right? But I refuse to hide from this issue. I refuse to be embarrassed by this issue. I'm so grateful that it is not incapacitating me more than 10 or 20 minutes a day. And it doesn't, it sort of incapacitates me during those 10 or 20 minutes. I can't function well. It's kind of, hey, Scott, could you leave me alone for 10 or 20 minutes? I promise I'll be back. So I think it's therapeutic. I think it is important for people to be open and honest with others about whatever it is that is affecting their performance, their feeling, their mood. I noticed you have used the term mental illness and mental disorders, and I think it's better to use the term mental health. We are all on a spectrum of mental health, and some of us are a little unhealthier at times than others. I see my problem as not a disorder, but just a dysfunction. My brain isn't functioning the same as yours 20 minutes a day. And isn't that interesting?
It really is.
I got to tell you, when I went to bed last night, I asked myself the question, what would happen, and this has never happened before, what would happen if I got one of those episodes while talking to Scott? And I didn't know the answer. But I thought it would be cool to find out.
We would find out together.
Here's what I decided, by the way. Next time, if someone calls and says, hey, Art, can you come on? I'm going to tell them ahead of time what the situation is. And if this happens, we got to be prepared to talk about it.
And that's very interesting, because so many people don't want to talk about it. Somebody the other day came up to me, and this was one of the most fascinating things. They said this person in their life stock answer to everything was, it's fine. I'm fine, it's fine, I'm fine. That is really not good when it comes to mental health, is it?
Probably not. Although, when you greeted me this morning, you said, how are you? And I said, never better. And I actually have been better. But that's coming from a different perspective. That's coming from the place where I do not take 1 minute of my life for granted. I am so grateful to have this minute. And so in that, looking at it that way, I am so grateful to be here at 83 and a half and able to talk with you about it. And that, in a sense, does make my life as good as it is.
Absolutely. And if you have these problems, seasonal or clinical, what is the hope? What is the hope for people in general who may feel like they're at the bottom of a black hole and miserable at this particular moment listening to this show?
Summer is just around the corner. That's what they have to keep in mind. The hope is that there are things that can be done about it. There are people willing to help, and summer and sunlight are just around the corner, and you need to keep that in mind. You don't like the picture? Change the frame. You will be better.
You know, this is such an interesting conversation to have here in our last 4 minutes. Somebody handed me a card yesterday, and I know a lot of people don't like to hear this, but and I hung it on my bulletin board at home, and it says, if you do what you always did, you will get what you always got.
That's so true. The card I keep on my wall is what Einstein is presumed to have said, which is, if you keep repeating the same error again and again in the hope of getting a different result, you're crazy.
And it is the truth.
Yeah.
Why?
The thing I have on my wall that I would like to leave with you and your visitors is a thought that was given to me by the Chinese artist Ai Weiwei, whom I believe is the greatest living artist in the world. He said, and he went to jail in China for saying things like this, a small act is worth a million thoughts. So if you're ruminating on something and it's driving you crazy, you keep thinking again and again about these depressing thoughts and negative thoughts, remember, a small act is worth a million thoughts. Get out of your chair. Walk out of your front door. Call a friend. Anything you do instead of ruminating on those negative thoughts is better.
That's why I think for most people, night can be difficult. Because it's harder, I think, for people to go out and do things at night and the phone stops ringing. And people start to think about everything that's wrong in their life, unfortunately.
I got simple advice for them. The phone isn't ringing. Pick the phone up and ring someone else's phone. A small act is worth a million thoughts.
Absolutely. And the final question for you, Dr. Yulin, because I think this has been an interesting conversation. Why is it, just everything we just talked about, doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different outcome, why do we do that? I mean, I understand we're creatures of habit. I understand we're human beings. But, I mean, we hit our head on these same walls continuously. And some people do it all throughout their life from the time they're born till the time they die.
This is what makes life so interesting. We're human. And there is a wide spectrum of variability if you're human. And we need to learn that and accept it and recognize that there's this bell-shaped curve. And you can move yourself on that curve if you're motivated to. And the goal is to move yourself up to the higher end of the curve. Sometimes we slip back to the lower end of the curve. But we are human, and we should not denigrate ourselves for being human.
You know, my mantra throughout my entire life, and I say this all the time, in good times and in bad, this too shall pass.
I like that. I like that.
And I think
I'm going to write that down and keep that on my office wall.
Dr. Art Yulin, it has been far too long since we've talked, and I hope we talk again very soon. It is always my pleasure.
Thank you, Scott. I look forward to that time.
Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. The legendary Dr. Art Yulin, medical expert on the Today Show and Good Morning America for so many years and wrote so many bestsellers on the New York Times list. I hope that helped if you're struggling with weight loss, if you're struggling with exercise, if you're struggling with depression, seasonal or bipolar disorder or anything. I hope that helped. That's a real educational piece. Linda Sims today, 4:10 to 5 p.m., Voice of a People. Pastor Spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker, 5:10 to 6 p.m. And, of course, the Adam the Computer Guy Show, 2:10 to 3 p.m. But for this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
WWGH1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road, telephone number 740-225-4495, webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. We'd love to have you listen. You know, call in, just get a conversation.